Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Drill Down with Marty Stetzer. This podcast is part of our EKTI Oil and Gas Learning Network and brought to you jointly with Upstream Intelligence in the UK. Upstream Intelligence is the foremost provider of business intelligence and analysis for the upstream oil and gas community. They are devoted to providing unique industry insight to drive efficiencies, reduce cost, and maximize production capabilities. Today, you'll be listening to our recent interview with Joe Perino in Houston, a longtime friend and industry veteran. Other podcasts with Joe are on his Sound Off channel on our EKT Interactive website. Joe and I met at Schlumberger in 2004 when he was working on a digital oil field project for a major offshore operator. We're really happy to have Joe's input on this new and important part of the upstream business. Hope you enjoy it. Joe, welcome.
Thanks, Marty. Good to be here.
Can you give our listeners your extensive industry background, especially as it relates to upstream, digital oil field, IoT, and analytics?
Certainly, Marty. And I have a long and varied career. I started my career as a process engineer in the refining and chemicals business. I then worked for a pipeline company, Northern Natural Gas. And then after that, I left and worked for about 20 years in the process automation industry for a couple of small firms, as well as Emerson and Honeywell. That led me to a career in consulting, which took me to IBM, i2, and then a seven-year stint with Schlumberger's business consulting group. And that's where we met, where I was working on a Shell Smart Fields project back in 2004 through 2007. And then post my time at Schlumberger, I've been working more on the IT side with the development and delivery of services to oil companies and oil field service companies. And then about 18 months ago, I went back on my own with my own management and technology consulting company. And as you know, I've been associated with you now for about 2 years through EKT.
Joe, thanks for that. You mentioned your extensive experience in the process control side of the business. How is IoT different from traditional control system technology? Or is it really different?
Well, IoT and automation are not quite the same thing. And I think it's an important distinction because when we started entering the digital oil field area, probably around the year 2000, with Chevron, Shell, and some of the other leaders, Saudi Aramco included, we were confusing the difference between automation and an intelligent field. And at that point, since many fields were not automated, we needed to take that step to automate them in order to produce real-time data. But IoT is different in that it's about the interconnection of all kinds of devices and people at all levels across the business. And so it's not the strictly the automation architecture that you might find in an ISA 95 model. Now, IoT has opened things up. So everything out there, whether it's static or dynamic, will have a digital personality. And in the case of a device that's a dynamic device like a valve or a sensor, obviously they're going to be producing data that is going to be connected to other devices. And that may be direct connected, that may be wirelessly connected, that may be connected by the cloud. Now, the important part of this thing for process automation firms is that this opens up additional capability for them to monitor and control what is going on in the facilities, which is where most of the systems are installed. And so they're now using IoT and the cloud, and they brought in predictive analytics to be looking at the health of processes and equipment to improve plant operations. So that's the nuance there.
I've seen developments in probably your 13, 14 years of watching this, Joe. What are some of the innovations that you're now seeing out there, especially in some of the startup organizations?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. One of the things that I've been involved with for the last year or so is the Houston Technology Center, which is a incubator for startups. And they incubate energy firms, IT firms, nanotechnology, life sciences, and so forth. And once I got into doing that, and I got introduced to HTC when I was at IBM, I started following IoT a lot more closely, and in particular, all of these startup analytics firms that have popped up. And there are literally hundreds of them, but I keep a list of around 12 to 15 companies that have surfaced that are addressing the oil and gas space. And this is in addition to the larger names like IBM and EMC, Amazon, Microsoft, and all kinds of other people that have offerings in this space. And so it's interesting to see how these firms are coming to market, where they're focused on, what they do, what value they're bringing, and how they're getting traction in the market, and frankly, whether they'll survive. Because we're still very early in the IoT space and this use of advanced analytics and big data for improving oil and gas, the oil and gas business.
Joe, when we did a similar podcast with Tony Edwards, he said the real challenge seemed to be in the analytics side, not in the sensor side, that we've had information available, like you're suggesting, in process control for decades. And now that the new tools enabling us to analyze that data are the real innovation. Are you seeing the same thing in your side of especially looking at some of these new startup organizations?
Well, yes, I am. But let me comment on Tony's observation. One of the things that has changed is that 10 years ago when I was working with Chevron and Shell, they would have many fields that they could not justify automating because of the cost. For example, a flow transmitter might be $1,500. And now sensor technology has gotten very inexpensive, so that if you're just going to be monitoring a production battery, you can buy sensors that may be $100, $150 that give you a pretty reasonable reading in terms of accuracy, and you're able to actually collect that data wirelessly now. So there's almost no excuse for not automating most onshore fields, and certainly most of the offshore fields are all automated because of their size and the investment. Now, Tony's right about the predictive about the analytics side. We've been doing predictive analytics, and I use the word predictive in this case, for quite some time, about 15 years, because that space, particularly around rotating equipment, is where things got started. Companies like SAS and a company called SmartSignal, which was acquired by GE and is now being migrated to the Predix platform, those people have been putting neural nets and machine learning algorithms on rotating equipment like compressors and so forth. Well, now this is spreading, and it's spreading to all kinds of things that it's being applied to. It's being applied to artificial lift mechanisms. It's being applied to enhanced oil recovery. It's being applied to frac stage optimization, so completion design. It's being applied to safety and security and cybersecurity. All kinds of areas where this is going. And this is the ability now of data to be collected, moved to the cloud, analyzed, and moved back. Or in fact, with computing power now, we can put a server on the size of a quarter and put it on a machine with memory and actually run analytics there. That's what we call edge computing. And when you combine that with what's going on in the cloud, you have this hybrid computing going on. And when you have, if you have a network of all of these things going on, this creates this term called fog computing. All these new buzzwords that we need to learn here to describe what it is that we're doing. So this thing has just exploded. And yes, it is a challenge because we're not yet at a place where we have what I'd call a mature set of platforms and solutions that users can buy that are pre-configured for the application they want. For example, a pull-down menu with all the artificial lift mechanisms on it. We're still in the point where we have platforms and solutions which require customization, if not outright programming, usually in Python or R, which is the languages that people use for machine learning. So we're still very early on in this phase. I think there's still a fair amount of hype, but lots of people are testing lots of things. And so this is a very rich area that we expect to grow significantly in the next few years.
Joe, you mentioned earlier GE, and I noticed that Jeff Immelt, the president of GE, said that the industrial IoT was the key to the future for GE. Now, they've been doing remote diagnostics on some of their power systems divisions for years. Do you see some of this being more accepted now that even the big players like GE and probably the Emersons are making more of an inroad to help the operator understand how to use all this information?
Yes, by all means. You know, GE started, I probably started that in their industrial area with trains and with aircraft, which are monitored continuously. And now they've got this platform where they're migrating a lot of their independent applications over to it. Smart Signal, I mentioned, but they're also looking at some of their software that they use for artificial lift management, moving that over. And you and I both know that because of the training we did for GE. So it is moving over. It's being applied. We know that BP is using this. I think they're going to be speaking, or at this point, by the time the listener hears this, they will have made a presentation, hopefully at our conference that's coming up, which is in early June of 2017. And so, yes, I think we're at the point where this is about to take off. But I would say this, overall, I don't think we've crossed the chasm yet on the maturity of these technologies. There's still a lot of testing. And aside from GE, there's only a couple of other platform vendors with a focus on oil and gas. So when I mentioned that there were 100 or 360, there's so much of this that's so much farther down the road in other industries. And so we're as usual, the oil and gas industry is behind in its uptake. But in defense of that, we have a tougher set of problems, more difficult data with data conditioning, data quality, time lags, and all kinds of other things. And someone asked the question the other day, what would you rather have, a better machine learning algorithm or better data? The answer is better data. So yes, this whole analytics thing is taking off, but it's also refocusing our efforts on getting good data from all the right sources so that we can actually use the analytics for better decision-making.
It's interesting you mentioned other industries, Joe. When we spoke with Tony, he said that they had seen some applications in mining. And I know coal bed methane is part of our oil and gas industry, but it's a totally different animal than the normal oil and gas production. But I want to go back to, you know, the part of the industry that has always had good solid process control. Is there something that the production operators can learn from the way that refineries and petrochemical plants are managed?
Well, two or three things. Refining went through a modernization period from the late 80s into the early 2000s, where they did a lot of standardization of their technology stack, if you will, which is not only the architecture around the facility, but the software tool set that goes with that. And until recently, they seem to be pretty satisfied with that. It's pretty mature. Oil and gas in the upstream has come from where organizations basically let the asset or the division choose what they want. And so you had all kinds of different installations, different technology stacks. We then went through and are still going through a phase where IT wanted to basically standardize this and in some cases centralize it because these organizations are so federated. And so they've had some success in that. Now we have IoT and data and analytics, and this is making us look back again at the business and operating models of these firms and ask the question, should we be thinking about what tech stack we're going to use even before we buy an asset, because our ability to manage it is now going to become more dependent on this use of advanced technology? So instead of just buying the asset and plugging it into the same old architecture with the same old tool set, we now have the ability to, let's just say, customize that within some degree and scale what we need to the business benefit we expect to get from the asset. And this requires, again, more upfront planning and thinking about how to apply this from the beginning, as well as potentially more complexity for IT, because they have to deal with the IoT situation where data is coming from all kinds of directions and flowing back to all kinds of directions. In particular, cybersecurity now becomes paramount because you've opened up the access to control systems and other data sources that heretofore were not interconnected like they can be now with IoT.
So what are some of the innovations you're seeing in the cybersecurity area, Joe, or is it being developed in parallel with some of these new innovations?
Well, in the cyber area, most of the activity, when you think about it, is what we call endpoint detection, which is how to detect the bad guy once they get inside the firewall or inside the network. And that's, of course, important because you want to limit the damage. But a lot more focus is being placed on being able to detect the bad guy before they get into the network. And that is where they're using artificial intelligence, machine learning, and other techniques to try and look at patterns of how the door is, let's use the term, how the door is being knocked upon, and try to say, hey, we may see some activity here that looks suspicious, and we're going to block it before it even has a chance of getting through. That's one thing. The other thing is that it's forcing people to look at redesigning their hardware from and making it cyber secure from the ground up, rather than relying on a network only to block the bad guys. And we saw this with Stuxnet's a few years ago, that once that virus got into the programmable logic controllers in the Iranian nuclear program, it shut down their centrifuges. So the answer is that the PLCs themselves, the control system, has to be cyber-proof, if you will, from the beginning, so that it's not just reliant on the network. So this is forcing everybody to kind of rethink how they're designing and engineering things and how they're manufacturing this. And it's a challenge for automation companies who heretofore had proprietary systems that, once you put a wall on it and you limited the connectivity, were relatively isolated from the outside. Well, now with IoT, and especially with ExxonMobil's push toward open systems, we're going to see more openness. And when you have more openness, you need more cybersecurity.
Joe, this has been an amazing amount of information in a short space of time, which I think our listeners will really enjoy. The importance of understanding the analytics, the many new companies that are out there leading the charge, and especially the importance of cybersecurity. But what I also heard was now IT is taking an important role right from the design engineering through the equipment design, and the way the process control systems like we had in the refinery are being operated. Did you like to add anything else for our listeners before we wrap up?
Yes, Marty, you made a good point there. It's now almost impossible to separate IT functions from the rest of the business, and in particular from OT, or operational technology, meaning the control systems people. So it will be interesting to see how organizations adjust themselves and build their capabilities to address this. I know of at least one major organization that merged IT and OT. That's one thing I think we want to keep an eye on. I think, in my opinion, is that makes sense. But I think that most organizations are lagging on that in terms of merging their organizations. So I'll leave it at that.
Joe, thanks again. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the important oil and gas industry, be sure to check out our free Oil 101 series at www.ektinteractive.com.